This MusicAndSports.net spotlight is brought to you by Piano Finders, member of the National Association of Music Merchants. Karen Lyle with you again, and we're going to hear from Barry Zito, three-time All-Star, great player, two-time World Series champion, Cy Young Award winner, who pitched 15 seasons from the Oakland A's and San Francisco Giants. In preparation for his life after baseball, Barry dove into the national music scene and now has an album titled No Secrets.
I guess my heart, it lied to me. It told me, yeah, that I could be the one to just move on. Tell me why these feelings are so strong enough to wreck.
Barry came from a musical family. His dad was an arranger, conductor, and bandleader for Nat King Cole.
My father would write out the parts for each person in the band. One of the best stories, I think, for Nat, though, was there's a famous song called Nature Boy, which is, you know, it's a jazz standard now, and it's been cut by many people. And my father and Nat were hanging out. I believe they were on the road, and somebody came up to Nat and said, hey, Nat, there's this kind of strange-looking man who has this song that he wants to play for you. And, you know, Nat was a really great guy, and Nat said, you know, all right, well, let's see what he's got. And it was the guy who wrote Nature Boy, who I believe was homeless at the time. And he came in and played it on piano and sang it. And my father and Nat and a couple other people were around the piano. And Nat loved it so much that he cut it. And that song, you know, from that day forward has gone on to be a huge song.
Barry took his guitar with him when he was on the road.
For me, music was always an escape. It was something that I would do to clear my head. I would just be home playing acoustic guitar. I started playing when I was 21. And I knew I was going to be in hotels and things like that playing baseball. And So for me, it was come home, play at night, you know, play on the road, bring the guitar, do those types of things. And, you know, it took many years to become proficient enough to actually start playing other people's music and things I could hear on the radio. But no matter what skill level I was at, it always created this catharsis for me.
Music and sports are connected for Barry.
There's a lot of similarities between pitching and music. I mean, you have to get your self-consciousness completely out of there. And stay in what you're doing. And when you're performing on stage, I mean, it's about giving. It's not about receiving something from someone. And, you know, that for me is, it's a challenge every time I do it, but that's why I love it. And, you know, telling a story set to melody is probably the coolest thing you can do when you can touch someone's heart and make somebody feel like they can relate to a story that you wrote about yourself and or your life. You know, things are universal in that.
Thanks so much, Barry. This is Karen Lyle with you here on MusicAndSports.net Spotlight. Special thanks to our sponsor, Piano Finders, a NAM member bringing these stories to music and sports fans globally on Sports Byline USA.
All right, thank you for that. And those of you who know the show know that Tuesdays at 9:40 Pacific, we check in with SalesportsTalk.com. And those who are new to the show, this is what we do on Tuesdays. And co-hosting this segment is Karen Lyle from SalesportTalk.com. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. You realize we're on the 134th show for Salesport Talk now?
Wow.
I know, we've been at it, but you know, I wanted to go back and remember our fourth show when CLGP was coming to San Francisco for the first time. And we had Tom Slingsby in the studio, and he was the fourth person to sign our wall. And I thought it would be great to take a trip back in time.
Let's take a trip back in time, and we'll go back to when Karen Lyle and I interviewed Tom Slingsby. In studio, we have Tom Slingsby, who is a member of SailGP Australia. But not only that, the 2010 World Sailor of the Year. That is pretty awesome, I got to say.
Yeah, no, it was a huge achievement for me. One of my checklists of my career goals, and that was probably the first career goal I ticked off.
Was it a medal, a trophy?
It was a trophy. It was a trophy presented over in Athens, Greece, and unfortunately my flight got cancelled as I was about to go there, so I had to get sent the trophy.
But then 2 years later, your own country, Australia, gives you the Medal of the Order of Australia. So now, I guess that's like an MBE in England or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Order of Australia Medal. it was given to all Olympic gold medalists at the Olympics in 2012. So, yeah, I was fortunate for that too.
Wow. Royalty.
Tom, I haven't seen you since America's Cup here in San Francisco, but you have been training in here in between a little bit here and there.
Yeah, after the last America's Cup in 2013, we came back to San Francisco about a year later and did a training camp here. And then the America's Cup, we moved over to Bermuda, and I was living in Bermuda for 2.5 years. And since then, I've been back in Australia.
Where were you training just right before you came here to San Francisco for the CLGP race in San Francisco?
So we had our first event. The first stop of CLGP was in Australia, Sydney, Australia. We did that event, and the way this works is the boats get put on ships and then head to the next event for the World Series. So we haven't really done too much training. We get a couple of weeks here, about 10 days of training before the event starts next weekend.
That was Valentine's Day, and I was on my app on Valentine's Day watching your race. It was so exciting. One of the
Were you sending lots of hearts?
What I was amazed at, because I'm a little geeky about this, is that you could tap on the boat, see the wind direction and the wind speed. And
wow.
For me as a sailor, I'm going, oh, wow, this is awesome. I get to actually visualize this. You were the strategist for the America's Cup team.
I was strategist for the 2013 America's Cup in San Francisco for Jimmy Spithill, and Ben Ainslie was the tactician. And then in the 2017 America's Cup, I was a tactician for Jimmy Spithill.
So now you're the skipper. Does that mean that you assembled the team?
Yes. I was able to head back to Australia and start recruiting all the talent we had. And fortunately, there's a lot of guys from the Oracle America's Cup team who were Australian. And we've got a lot of those guys on our Australian team now.
You have upped the game for them, I would say, because you've really given them a challenge with this last race that you did, taking first.
Yeah, the first event was on home waters for us, so we've grown up sailing on Sydney Harbour, and everyone in my teams are from around Sydney, the Sydney area. So, yeah, we had to put in a good performance. We had a lot of pressure on ourselves there, friends and family watching, Australian country, all our crowd watching us and hoping that we're going to win, and fortunately we did.
What is it about sailing? How old were you that you didn't want to be a, you know, Aussie rules or a Socceroo? What was it about this sport?
I grew up, my dad's a sailor and my older sisters were sailors. I sailed maybe once a week from about the age of 5 to 15.
Wow.
I was full-time tennis at that stage. I was playing tennis before and after school for 6-7 days a week for 10 years. And then I actually burnt out at tennis. At 15, 16 years old, I think it was for my birthday. I said, for my birthday, I want to quit tennis and never play it again. And it was just all too much, too young. And and then at that stage, I was just starting to love sailing. The Sydney Olympics were on in Australia in the year 2000. And I went down and watched the sailing from the foreshore and became obsessed. And I said, that's what I want to do. I want to compete in the Olympics and compete for my country in sailing.
That's pretty amazing that you said that about tennis, because both of my cousins, male and female, they were in Reno. They were both state champions in tennis. They played it their whole life, and they graduated high school, and they never wanted to see a tennis racket again.
Yeah.
Why does tennis burn people out so hard?
it does. It's a pretty grueling schedule. I trained morning and night, and I remember I said this was too much for me as a 15-year-old kid, and I backed the training off, and my results got worse. And then I put the training back up, and it was just too much.
Wow.
And I didn't pick up a racket for about 8 years.
Well, I think you made the right decision, as we can see. I also know that you love Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I had Royce Gracie in here, whose dad basically invented the sport. And he gave me a very interesting adage about how he approaches it. And I wonder if you put this into sailing. He said in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I'm not trying to beat you. I'm waiting for you to lose, which seemed weird. Can you take that and put that into sailing, or do you have to always be aggressive?
Yeah, no, for sure. In sailing, there's a common saying called, he who makes the least mistakes wins. And you're always waiting for someone to make a mistake. Everyone's working at 100% and racing at 100%, and then someone will make a mistake. They'll do a bad tack or a bad jibe, a bad start, tactically lose a spot here or there. And, if you can just keep it on 100% for as long as you can, you're going to win the race. And no, it's not possible, but so we just try to make as little mistakes as possible.
So when you're sailing, are you only concentrating on what you need to do, or do you see a mistake and then you pounce and change your tactics?
For sure, you can see an opportunity. For example, if you're behind in the race and you're sailing upwind, you can maybe see, they're opening the door here. They're sailing into less wind, or They're not covering us tight. They're giving us an opportunity to break away and get some leverage on them. You realize the opportunities and you can decide, okay, it's too high risk to go for this now. We'll lose the race if we go for this. Or it's just risk management and assessing it as the race goes on.
What was the opportunity that stands out in your mind in the Sydney race that you took advantage of to help you win that race?
Yeah, for us, it was all about starting. The first race of the series, we had a poor race and we just didn't sail too well. And then from then on, we said, okay, we've got to be the team that dominates the starts. We've got to pick the side of the line, which we know is favoured, and we've got to fight for it. And for a few races there, a couple of the teams didn't want to get in the dogfight with us for the pin end of the start line. And we were able to get really good starts and get away from the fleet. And then our team is very polished. We knew that if we got out in front, we're not going to make that many mistakes, and you've got to do something pretty special to overtake us. So goal was to be aggressive at the start, get out in front, and then do what we know what we can do, and that's sail well and sail fast.
Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with Tom Slingsby. He is with Australia GP. I want to say you're probably recognized in Sydney because here's Australia, a country of 24 million people, but they win like a third of all the medals at the Olympics. They're a very sporty lot, as you know.
Yeah.
What is your era of recognition when you go home?
Not too much, actually. Sailing's not massive. It's after the Olympics in London, I think it was my medal that sort of broke a bit of a medal haul drought for Australia. We hadn't won a gold medal in, I think it was a week and a half or so of competition.
Oh, a whole week and a half.
Yeah, something like that. And then I was the first person. So I got quite a bit of recognition for that. And but then a week after coming back to Australia, I was getting stopped everywhere I went. And I ended up moving to San Francisco for the America's Cup. So the recognition didn't last long. And now I walk around the streets unnoticed. Uh-huh. It's quite nice.
Okay.
The start of a race is sometimes the most exciting part. And for the lay public who don't know about how the race starts, can you tell us how the starting line is established in the SailGP race?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of... It's tricky to start. You've got a start line, and you've got, for us in the SailGP, we've got six boats. We all hit the start line at the same time, trying to go as quick as we can. It all comes down to positioning, acceleration, and tactics, how you want to maneuver around the other boats. And then there's a mark, which is what we call a reaching angle. It's about 90 degrees to the wind, about 500 meters away from the start line. And all the boats come off the line hydrofoiling. Here in San Francisco, we'll be doing 40 to 50 knots of boat speed. Mm. And it's who gets that first position. It's the equivalent to essentially maybe a Formula One start where all the boats are on, all the cars are on a straight line. You don't have your positioning on the grid. And it's who gets the best acceleration, who can maneuver to fight for the inside position. So I'd say that's probably the best way to describe it, is a straight line in a car race. And whoever can get first into that first turn has got a big advantage.
Now, the start line is established. You don't know where it's going to be exactly, right? Doesn't it depend upon the wind?
It's always moving, and so we're always hanging around the start area. And once they establish a position, it's usually maybe 6 or 7 minutes before the start, we start doing practice runs. We start figuring out which end of the line is favoured. We start doing practice runs to get our time on distance to make sure we hit the line going as fast as we can on the start line. And we also strategically try to figure out where the other teams are going to be and who's high risk, who's low risk, and where do we want to fit in that equation.
And one final question for you. As the skipper, you get to, I guess, pick. Sometimes I think we assume you're at the helm, but maybe that's not your strength. Where do you see yourself as, I have to be right here to be most effective?
For me, I was a skipper. I was steering the boats my whole life at the Olympics and so on. And then for the first time, I sort of stepped away from that with Oracle Team USA in the America's Cups I did, and I became a strategist and then a tactician, and now I'm back steering. For me, I'm pretty comfortable anywhere in those areas, in the tactical playbooks or steering the boat, but for me, it's nice to show that I am a skipper. I can steer boats. It's been a long time since I've done it, but I probably feel most comfortable steering the boat, and this is the first time really in about 7 years where I've headed back and started steering the boats again.
Well, we've been with one of the best sailors in the world. He has the hardware to back that up, and Olympic medalist as well, Tom Slingsby from Australia, SailGP Australia. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back.